Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. An early Mother's Day present for you. This hour of our program, George Hodgman is our guest. He's the author of a really beautiful book, Bettyville. George travels from New York City, where he has worked as an editor of major publishing houses and done some writing himself, back to his hometown of Paris, Missouri in 2011 or 2012. I'm not sure the date here, but it's a small town. It's a rural area. He calls it a population of 1,246 and falling. And he is there to look after his mom. His mom is in her 90s. And Carol, he calls the good-hearted woman, the farm woman who helps watch out for Betty, is recovering from surgery on her rotator cuff. So George decides that he will stay until she can be admitted to an assisted living facility or until there is rain or Betty's spirits mend or he gets a regular job again. He winds up spending quite a bit of time in Paris, Missouri. As a matter of fact, he's still there. He's joining us from Paris, Missouri this hour of the program. The book is about her. It's about his life there. It's about their connection. It's about growing up in a small town as a gay boy and as a gay man and not being able to talk about that with his mom. I'd be interested to know what the community thinks because they'll really get to know George as a result of this book. And this book is just really getting all kinds of attention. It is really beautiful. And we're delighted to have him with us. And to welcome phone calls. Probably some of what he says about his mom and his life will resonate with you because it sure did with me, even though I didn't grow up in a rural kind of setting in Missouri. But, we can see moms. We can see moms of a certain age in what George writes about his mom. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, leave messages there, is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Hello, George.
Hi there. How are you?
Oh, George, what a writer you are. You are just, it is such a beautiful book. I read two books a week, sir, but this is just a beauty. It really is. And you're just getting all this great rave review. And I think about where you were when you wrote it and the fact that you should have been writing all these years. I know you've done some, but you're gifted.
Well, that is so nice. Your music to my ears. And I appreciate your reading it and attending to it, and I'm, I'm grateful. I'm grateful for every nice thing that has happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're worthy, deserving of all of it. You say at one point in the book, and I think about your writing, that your mom raised you to get it right to work, that she taught you by example, and I thought we would start there, maybe by how she practiced the piano or other things that she may have done, but she raised you to get it right, and you've done that.
Well, I don't know whether I think I've gotten it right enough, but I think that, like a lot of people, a lot of American people who come from her generation, I mean, she was born in 1922, she lived through the Depression, and I mean, her notion of what you're supposed to do in life is work, and you work hard, and you put the meal on the table, and you keep the house clean, and you save your money, and I think that the values that with my mother was raised with, I mean, they're great values in a whole lot of ways, and Lord knows they helped me because I was a workaholic, and that is what has, led to any success that I've had.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, there are some parts of that way of thinking or that older way of being that have changed and, can make it a little bit complicated when you're dealing with children who, are living in a different world.
Right. Well, let's talk about those different worlds, because it's one thing to go and visit mom because the person who looks after her has had surgery and she needs somebody to look after her. It's one thing to do that and say, I'm going to go down and spend a week. It's another thing to have been there for the number of years that you've been there, George, and to just... Many of us would find that hard to do. You were in Rumble Tumble, New York. You were working in the book publishing field, and yet you've been able to transition your heart and your mind back to the place you grew up and with your mom.
Well, I had lost, you know, I'd been laid off from my regular job, and I was doing freelance editing in New York, And I was really kind of, you know, I didn't like working in my apartment all day long. In the, you know, I love the community of the workplace, and I was, you know, I felt kind of lonesome working there all day long, and so that was my state of mind when I came home. And my mother was always this incredibly independent person, and she never. She still never complains, and she just is fierce about controlling her life. And when I came back, and I mean, she was spending her time on the couch, and she wasn't eating right, and she had had a boyfriend, and he had died, and she lost her driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't driving very much. She, you know, we had a solemn vow that she could only drive to, you know, a few blocks to the grocery store here and there, you know, just the necessities. But when she lost the ability to drive and to have that sense that she could be, you know, that she could move, that she could go someplace, I mean, that was such a devastating blow. And it I got home and I didn't make the decision that I would come to stay, you know, that it was just one thing after another that we dealt with.
Right.
And I realized that I didn't mind being here. And that after all these years of takeout food and a studio apartment, I mean, it was kind of like, you know, kind of nice to live in a house. And it was also, I mean, my mother, and I hope this comes through in the book, is my mother is funny.
Yes, it does come through in the book.
And she's a character, and she's entertaining. And so it's not hard to be around her, you know? She does make me laugh, but you know, she with her dementia. I mean, my mother is struggling so hard to hang on to her life, to hang on to her mind, to hang on to, you know, some semblance of life as it has always been, And I just was, from the very beginning, I was really moved by that. And I really didn't think that her life, I didn't think things were going to go on this long. But I'm glad they have. And I just didn't, you know, my mother's never scared. She's never fearful of anything, whether it's a tornado or, you know, she's not scared. But I could tell that she was scared because she knew that she was losing her faculties.
Right. Well, and also, I want you to talk a little more about this. You write that she has been your rock and that you are convinced at some level she has survived to give you, a gay man whose life she has never understood, a place to call home.
Yeah, I do. I mean, that is... I mean, people live because they're physically able to live and because they're healthy, but I also think they live because, you know, they want to live or they feel that they have something to do in the world. And I do think my mother has one of the reasons that she has not given up is that she knows that I need her. And she knows that I want her to be here and that I want our family to continue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yet, there are moments, and there are a lot of them in the book, you talk about sometimes you loathe her as well as just love her, just like a typical American family, torn between love and homicide, but united in your way.
Well, we're very united, and we're very, we have a very deep, strong bond. But when you're dealing with an older person, and I mean, here I was back and in her territory, her
yes.
house.
Right.
And it was very much, you know, it's like almost like two animals, you know, laying down the boundaries, sniffing around, making sure nobody was in their turf. And, you know, my mother was deeply attentive to, you know, maintaining her control. And so one of the things that I found myself very reluctantly having to do was be this person who was like, well, you know, you have to do this or you have to do that, or, you know, we've got to see this doctor or do this thing or take this walk or whatever. And she didn't like it. You know, she didn't like it. She didn't like being told what to do. And I could relate. I hate being told what to do. And, you know, and we're basically, you know, I am her. We're stubborn people. And so it is, you know, it's like, you know, it's any relationship. Every relationship that is strong, I think, has love, but it also has conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I thought it was really important to be honest about the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And because everyone, you know, a lot of these books I read, and they're like Hallmark cards, and they're very lovey-dovey, and, you know, and I wanted to try to show how it really is.
Right. Oh, you've done that, and then some. I love these. When you say she was stubborn, you get at it so beautifully. I love the passage where you're trying to get it to the the Waikiki coiffures, where you always expected the operators to be in lays. And they're saying, you know, they don't like her shoes. They're looking to see how she's dressed. They're blaming you if she's got a spot on something. And she's just dilly-dallying. She does a lot of dilly-dallying, which is also a great word, because you got to get her out of the house. You got to get her to these places, right? And she doesn't want to go.
Oh, well, that's, you know, that's part of it. It's like, you know, there are commitments. There are things she has to do. And there are days when she just doesn't want to do it. And she's quite firm. And she doesn't want to go here. She doesn't want to go there. And she doesn't want to try on clothes or try on shoes or do some of the things that we have to do. And just at the moment when you are just ready to throttle her, then something happens. And, you know, when I would take my mother to the beauty shop, and we had this one woman who was rather sort of critical, and it's like, it was like sending my kid out into the playground or something, and suddenly it was, you know, she seems so vulnerable to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's so many feelings and that one has, you know, there are so many times when you know, it's like I just want to protect her.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about you, because a lot of the book is what you were living through as well. And I have to believe that it's not very easy for a gay man to not really be able to talk, and I know a lot of gay men have gone through this, to be able to talk to their parents about who they are. But there are some passages that make you want to cry when you were living in New York, and I think you make reference to every third or fourth man you met was worried about dying of AIDS and maybe dying of AIDS. And you had to think, well, what if I get sick? What if I have AIDS? How in the world can I tell my parents who didn't really know very much about my life? And then you say, well, I don't think that I could tell them because I couldn't hurt them that much, because you'd have to open up your whole life to people who had lived, you know, kind of around it, knew, but really didn't talk about this. And it brings to mind a lot of questions, how hard it was for you to keep the essence of who you were from a family discussion, and also how all of a sudden here you are in this book, and you're still in Paris, Missouri. And I'm wondering if people are saying, wow, here's George. We never knew him before.
Yeah, now they know more than they want.
They know a lot. Yeah.
A lot of people seem to know more than they want. But, I mean, my parents, like a lot of our parents, they weren't taught how to talk about some of these things.
Right.
Homosexuality or just sex in general or a lot of, you know, a lot of personal things. You know, like I said before, my mother was taught to work. She was taught to, you know, do her part, to take care of others, to, you know, but she wasn't taught how to talk about her feelings. She still can't.
Mm-hmm.
I have to just dredge them out of her. And she did not teach me to talk about mine.
Mm-hmm.
And so the two of us together, you know, it's no wonder that the gay thing was a real challenge. And it was the one challenge, I think, in our relationship that we didn't meet.
Right.
You know, we did so many things right. But this one thing, we didn't do so well.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, when this book came out, I mean, when this book went to press, and it was definitely being published, I couldn't change it. I thought I was going to have a breakdown.
Oh, George. Yeah.
Because it was like, suddenly I felt, I think I was in some kind of denial about how open I was in this book. And I suddenly realized, oh my gosh, everybody in town is going to be reading this, and my sixth grade teacher is going to be reading about my sex life, which wasn't very interesting, but, you know, but people have been really supportive and really surprisingly lovely to me. I mean, these people that I went to grow up in, and I've, you know, a lot of things in this book, I've really pushed their comfort level. I mean,
right.
This is a conservative town.
Mm-hmm.
But that you bring up the AIDS and you know, that was such a tough time, and I didn't have AIDS, but I could not live with this notion that my parents would have to go through that they would have to lose me, and part of it was that I was worried that they wouldn't have anybody here that they could really talk to about it,
mm-hmm.
you know, or that they would talk. They would just close off. And, you know, the experience of publishing this book, it's just reminds you that most people are really just basically pretty darn good people who are, you know, they've had their problems. They have had their complications in their lives. They've gone through, you know, their stuff with their parents. They've gone through divorce. They've gone through whatever, drugs, you know, alcohol, whatever. And people have gone out of their way to be understanding. I'm really grateful.
Yeah.
I love this community.
Oh, I can tell. And there's also something to be said, and it sounds to me like you're not the kind of guy who takes... You take pride, when you get praise, you kind of blush about it. But there is something to be said for being able to write like that, like you do, and to create an understanding, too, so that you make people feel how much you love your mom, you know, and admire the people who live there. And there's nothing nasty about it. There's just an honesty about it that I'm sure makes accepting people sort of open their arms. They may not give you a hug. It doesn't sound like a hugging kind of place, but they're opening their arms. And that makes it worthwhile to have written it, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. It makes it worthwhile to have written it. And I mean, everybody comes up. They want to help my mother. They want to talk to me about their own mothers. Right. One of the reasons that I wanted to write this book was that, I worked at Vanity Fair. I worked at Simon & Schuster. I worked on books and magazine articles about powerful people or movie stars or whatever, you know, and my mother's journey has so engaged me in the everyday battle.
Yes.
And I wanted to capture the everyday battle of an older person, but I also really wanted to capture what it's like for a gay kid to grow up in a place that doesn't get him, and also for what, you know, like, when I came back here, women who have gay children would corner me in the grocery store and say things like, oh, my friends say that my daughter's a lesbian because I'm a bad mother. Uh-huh. And I think that, you know, and you read about, I mean, kids take their own lives because parents in places are just not, they're not taught how to deal with this. So I was hoping to write a book that would, you know, I wanted to put people in my shoes as a kid who didn't know anything about being gay, didn't know anything about the lifestyle. I want to put them in my shoes and help them understand what kids go through. Because, you know, it's like, I think a lot of people think, oh, you know, my 13-year-old says he's gay. And it's like, oh, well, that's, you know, they don't understand that that is an awful lot for a kid to take on.
Right. We're going to welcome phone calls. If you want to join our conversation, the book is just out. I hope somebody's already read it, because I'd love to talk to you about it. But it's so beautiful. It's titled Bettyville. George Hodgman is the author. And as you heard George just say, he's a veteran magazine and book editor. He's worked at Simon & Schuster, Vanity Fair, Talk Magazine. His writing has appeared in Entertainment Weekly, Interview, W, Harper's Bazaar. He is living in Paris, Missouri, where he went several years ago just to spend a little time with his mom, who is in her 90s and not doing very well and needs somebody to look after her. And the person who was looking after her had surgery, so George went down to look after her for a while, and it turned into a long while, and it turned into the book that we're talking about, and that he wrote at the card table in the house of his mom, Betty. Would you like to join us? You probably do have some, he's probably struck a nerve somewhere in what he said already, or if you'd like to remember your mom's in some way, that would be good. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. You can also, you know, even if you want, it's kind of our Mother's Day show, so on our Facebook page, if you want to put a thought about your mom, those would be nice to read, too. It's good to write about your mom. We all think about our moms a lot during our lifetimes. So that's the Kathleen Dunn Show, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to phone calls. Our guest is the author of Bettyville, George Hodgman, and let's go to Barb in Waukesha. Hi, Barb.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Good.
I just want to say that I came out to my mom when I was about 30, and she was amazing, just truly amazing. She was like, okay, fine. And I've been with my partner for 25 years, and my mother was wonderful.
Was it hard?
I guess it's wonderful.
Was it hard for you to tell her that when you were 30, Barb, or not?
No. My mom was a really cool lady. A lot of people in Waukesha knew her.
She sounds great.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah.
She sounds great. Thank you very much for the call. And I hope at least times are different now that it would be easier for everybody. I love, though, you know, you probably could have had a long talk with your mom about all of this. I love this passage of the book where when you were a child, before you went to sleep, Betty, you write, reached for my book and closed it, took my glasses off, folded them, laid them on the table and took my hands. And then you would do, now I lay me down to sleep. You would do the prayer and then she would name names of people to pray for. And you talk about her calling and checking on those she barely knew when they came out of the hospital if they were ill. She worried about people who were out there on their own. And the worst thing she could imagine was being sick and alone.
Yeah, my mother, I mean, another reason that I want to be here for my mother is the fact that my mother has always taken care of other people. And she took care of people in her family. I mean, she took care of her own mother, my father's mother, aunts and uncles, things like that. But particularly after my father died and she was alone, when she was younger and healthier, she really watched out for a lot of other older people. And I really sort of am trying to show that that is the spirit of the old American small town.
Right. Right. My mom, I remember this. I was just thinking, I think about her so much these days. I'm not sure why. But my mother used to, she got her driver's license. She was a city girl, grew up in Chicago and wound up in the suburbs, and she didn't get her driver's license until she was in her 30s. And she was so proud of herself. And I distinctly remember her taking us to swimming lessons, and she would stop, George, at all the bus stops where people were trying to get to downtown Des Plaines or Park Ridge. And she'd say, come on in, I want to give you a ride. You just pick people up all over town and take them to where they were going. It's that same kind of spirit of not being afraid, really, and trying to be generous, right?
Trying to be generous.
Yeah, it's
trying to be helpful.
Right. Thank you, Barb, for your call. Jean in Madison, hi. Jean? Yeah, I'm sorry, Jean, call back. I didn't mean to cut you off. I didn't think you were there. David in Milwaukee. Hi, David.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm a straight man, you know, but this time of year, I always think of my mother, passed about 25 years ago, and I know if I was gay or something, I know she wouldn't understand it, but it would have, that's the way I saw it. Just because I don't understand something doesn't mean I don't care or don't love you, and I know she'd love me no matter what. You know, and what a wonderful book. I can't wait to get this book to read. Thank you for writing a book like that. I think it's going to help a lot of people.
Yeah, I think so, too. And you will love reading it. It is one beautiful book. Well, there's this scene where you bring home your, you didn't have a lot of luck in love, but you brought home your college, the first guy, first love, your first love. I think you brought him to, or he wanted to meet your parents, so you brought him to Paris, Missouri, and you thought your parents were in bed and you were making out on the couch and your father saw you, and then the next day, you know, it wasn't that he was unpleasant or mad or anything, he just didn't say anything. He just didn't say anything, right?
Yeah, he didn't say anything. He said nothing, I think that my parents and I thought that it was really hard for them to talk about. They thought that it was really hard for me to talk about.
Right.
We were not naturally inclined to talk about personal matters, particularly if sex were involved. You know, the love was never a question. You know, it just never was. It was just an issue of communicating around this issue And I'm trying to say in the book that a family doesn't have to be perfect to be a great family.
Right.
But I do think that when you get to the end and you're sort of sorting through all the things that have happened, you know, you don't want to get to the point where you think, gee, I wish we could have been just this much closer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have what you have. Forgive me for not knowing all of this. The latest I read is that your mom is still living. She's had cancer treatments. Is she still with you?
Yes, she is. And she's actually about two rooms away right now, sitting here reading The True Confessions of Ava Gardner.
That's great.
She just told someone that it's the filthiest book she's ever read and recommended it very highly. But she, you know, yeah, we're battling cancer. She's had radiation and she has these dementia issues that complicate our life. But she is still Betty and she's still a fighter, and she's doing her best. And she right now has got a broken rib, and that's very complicated.
Yeah, I'm sure. I love the stories about watching soap operas, and I think you watch them with her. Do you watch soap operas together still? Are there still soap operas on TV?
Well, I think they are, but I also think they're kind of dirty.
Are they?
But I don't watch them. The person that I watch the soap operas, I watched them by myself when I was a little kid because I was very curious about anything, you know, all these aspects of adult life. But my aunt was the one who was the soap opera addict, and I would call up my aunt and, you know, and talk to her about, you know, the soap operas. And but my mother has become, she's not really a TV person. She's a reader.
Mm-hmm.
And, has become more and more of a reader as you know, as she's gotten older.
Well, so I have to ask, has she read your book?
She has not.
She hasn't.
And I have read parts of it to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's come to my readings, and she's really enjoyed, you know, the parties and seeing people. And you know, I've asked her to wait, and it's whether or not she will actually sit down and read the whole book is a question that we haven't answered completely yet.
I like the idea, George, though, that you're reading parts of it to her. There is so much of it that is so beautiful that she should hear. You don't have to read the whole book, right? There are just parts of it that she should know.
Yeah, and that was the readings. It was an opportunity to really honor her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I dedicated the readings, particularly the ones around here, to her. And they were, you know, and I read parts like the one, you know, the saying our prayers and mm-hmm. that you mentioned and other things that were, that I wanted her to hear.
Right,
but she didn't say anything at all. You know, it's sort of like she was too she kind of didn't want to hear the compliments.
Oh, she sounds like you. You are her son, right? You are Betty's son. It sounds like
I'm Betty's boy.
Right, I can understand. And obviously it hasn't been a lot of dealing with somebody who has dementia and with cancer treatments as well, but you write also in the book that she gets up a lot at night and turns the light on in the room where you are, and you're not much of a sleeper either, but she has moments when she gets very tense, she's obsessing on something.
The nights are hard. Mm-hmm. Dementia people have Sundowner syndrome, and as the night progresses, she gets more and more confused, and I sleep with the dog, and the dog wants to take the center of the bed, you know?
Yeah, I know.
And I was like, I'll get in bed, and I'll succeed. I'll push the dog over and finally get in bed, and then Betty will, like, get out of bed, and I'll run in to try and help her, and then come back, and the dog will be back in the middle of the bed, and I'll get him off, and then she'll be up again. And,
right.
And so, I mean, she getting her to go to bed and stay there and sleep is really hard, and she obsesses over words that she can't remember, and she makes these lists and asking the same questions over and over and over. And that's a lot of that is at night, and so the night here is kind of busy.
Yeah, it sounds like it. But there's also this tenderness too. I think you thought she was cold. She got up for one of those, whatever she was doing, turning the coffee pot out or something, or trying to make coffee, and she went into bed, and you saw that her feet were sticking out, and so you got warm towels and put them on her feet, which I thought was, that's a real sweet thing to do. That's a real act of love.
Well, you warm the towel up in the dryer.
Yeah.
And then you wrap them around. Old people always have cold feet.
Mm-hmm.
I've been raised with old people, and they obsess about their feet, and often they're cold, and so that's one little trick.
Right. That's what they do in spas now, too, right? They put hot towels on your hands and on your feet, too. They've learned that. We all like that.
I could use a hot towel. I'll bet you could, too.
It sounds like you really could. We're going to welcome more phone calls. Our guest is George Hodgman, and the book is Bettyville. It's our Mother's Day gift to you. It's really a beautiful book. I read a lot of books, and I think you should read this one. It will make you cry, and you'll remember your mom and growing up, and he knows how to put words together, let me tell you. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and what else? Oh, yeah, Twitter. Twitter is at K Dunn Show. And just to give you a sense of the kinds of reviews the book has been getting, in the Chicago Tribune review, Hodgman has written what will be seen even years from now as the quintessential book on taking care. His desire to empathize, his focus on goodness, his search for hope allow him to find the beauty in the hour of now. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And let's return to phone calls for George. Anna in Harbor Springs. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Kathleen and George. I just wanted to make a comment in reference to what you said about your mother when she knew she was starting to lose her mind and dealing with a parent at that stage. I went through the same thing with my mom, and there were times because she knew something was wrong, but she didn't like it because she was really independent, and she was really upset about it, and she was in denial, too. There were times when she would be doing something that was kind of unsafe, and I happened to be there, and I would try to get across to her that she may not be able to live by herself anymore. And sometimes these conversations would escalate into arguments, and it was nearly impossible not to argue sometimes. And I just want to say to people who are in that situation, because much later you may regret it, but don't give yourself such a too hard a time about it. Dealing with dementia is a nasty trick that nature plays on a lot of us, not just the person who has the dementia.
George?
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, everything you say, I agree with. And but, you know, I think the hardest thing to deal with is their fear. I mean, it's one of the hardest things. Because I really almost could see in my mother the part of her that had already drifted off and the part of her that was trying to hang on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that hanging on part that I so related to. And, you know, around the issue of dementia, there's the depression, there's the anxiety. You can't really, you know, you have to accept what you can't change. And that's the dementia. But you can do you can figure out some things that make them less depressed and that can distract them from their condition. And I know that I will never, ever regret this time. This has been, in the book, there's this woman who I read about it in the paper or something, and she was, like, talking about, you know, she called her time, last days with her mother, our gold star days.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of these as our gold star days.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
And I hope your mother is either doing okay or has found a peaceful end.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Anna, so much for your call. Sharon is next in Monroe. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I am so glad that I'm in the car. Listen, it's beautiful, beautiful interview. Just my heart. I've been a similar situation, and I described George, whom I think is...
Sharon, can you call us back? I know it's just hard to hear you because the phone isn't very well. You've obviously touched her deeply, but we want to be able to hear your words. So get yourself to a phone that has a good connection, Sharon, and we will be happy to talk to you.
Call back, Sharon, because we want to hear you.
Yeah, we sure do. Do you still, when you talk about trying to bring your mom back, I was imagining, and I could easily imagine it because of the way you write, the two of you tooling down the road. She was driving a little too fast, both of you listening to Downtown, Where All the Lights Are Bright, and other songs. Both of you kind of like that kind of music. Do you play music? Does she respond to music now?
What she likes is the Phantom of the Opera.
Of course.
And she has somehow... last song that I'm on the upper, so we, you know, it's like, particularly if she has to go to radiation, mm-hmm. or if she has to go to some of the, you know, if we have a bad doctor's appointment, I'll always play music mm-hmm. on the way over.
Mm-hmm.
And, but what she really likes is Dirty Dancing Night, because she loves Dirty Dancing, and she loves that song. I've had the time of my life, and I think she has a really bad crush on Patrick Swayze. And I have not told her that Patrick Swayze is no longer with us, but
no.
About once a month, we watch Dirty Dancing. And it never fails. It's like, if there's, you know, it's like, on the worst day, there is always Dirty Dancing.
Oh, I'm going to remember that always. On the worst day, there's always Dirty Dancing.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And a gin and tonic can also help.
At 5 o'clock, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Lori is next in Pewaukee. Hi, Lori.
Hi there. Good afternoon, both of you.
Hi.
George, I just wanted to say thank you for being on today. Your book sounds amazing, and I look forward to picking it up. But I also wanted to thank you for bringing up, I forgot your exact words, but you said you wrote about how it was to be a gay kid in your book. And it was before you understood sex and sexuality. And I think that's just such a huge component of growing up gay, is that you're viewed from and judged by grown-ups at that point who understand sex and think it's about sex. And as a kid, you don't understand those things. You just have these feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really appreciate you bringing that into part of your book. I mean, that just sounds like a great perspective for everyone to sit in those shoes for a little bit.
Well, I think that one of the things that has always struck me is that gay kids are in disguise when they're children. You know, no, people don't think about it. And so gay kids... are, you know, they hear everything that people say about gay people. And when I was growing up, it was always negative. And so you're sitting there in disguise and you're having to listen to all this stuff. And so that is really hard. And I think also gay kids, when I was a kid, I know that I almost had a sixth sense or developed a sixth sense for people who I felt safe with.
Really? Interesting.
And I think that there's a lot to explore yet about what it's like to grow up as a gay kid in this country and how it is that we internalize shame. and what that does, you know, your entire life. Excuse me.
Who did you feel safe with, George?
I felt safe with certain aunts. I felt safe with certain friends of my mother's. I felt safe with women much more than men. Hmm. I didn't feel safe with I didn't feel safe with hyper-masculine men.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, now, and you think it's better, you know, you think gay people are more accepted, and yes, they are, and it's a good thing that so much is talked about, and that this issue is talked about more. But I mean, you go on the internet, or you listen to a TV chat show, and you listen to politicians talk, and there is still so much negative that's being said about gay people, and gay kids take that in.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lori, very much for your call. Thanks. So how do you, I don't understand how you navigate all these worlds. I mean, I'm really glad I'm glad you're with your mom, but I'm wondering, you know, where you'll go when your mom dies. We all die. Eventually she'll die. If you will stay in Paris, Missouri, if you're there mostly for her, if you miss the hubbub of the publishing world in New York, your life is going to go in a different direction, I think, with after this book, George, don't you? I
mean, I'm headed to Wisconsin.
No, when?
No, I'm kidding.
Well, that's big time.
I don't know. I mean, it's like I kind of, I don't look forward to my mother dying, but I do sort of try to think of the next phase of my life and look at reinvention as the challenge, and I've been away from New York now 4 years, and I still have my apartment there, and I don't miss New York in the way that I thought I would. I miss the people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to have to, you know, I would like to keep this house where I am with my mother and which my father built, and I'd like to keep this as a summer place. I think this is a really beautiful place in the spring and summer, and I just bought lilac bushes to plant.
Oh, I love lilac bushes. Oh, my. Boy, does that remind me of my mother, lilac bushes.
Well, and a flowering crabapple tree.
Oh.
And
you have the roses still, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The roses, my grandmother's roses.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to keep them alive, so, you know, I want to hang on to this as home as part of my life.
Mm-hmm. What will you do on Mother's Day?
That's a problem, I'll tell you. We have in the past, we often will go to a brunch. There's a club that my mother's a member of, and we sometimes go to a brunch at that club, and but like I said, she's got a broken rib, and she may be in too much pain to do that.
No.
So
yeah.
I'm really trying to consider that, and I know that I can make her a really nice fancy breakfast. And,
mm-hmm.
But I have to, you know, put my head down, and I imagine I'll ask some friends over.
That's good. Well, just make sure the coffee isn't too strong because you'll be wasting money, right?
Yeah, that's exactly that. Right.
Got to make weak coffee.
I know. You should see the look she gets. Me when it's like after the third or fourth tablespoon of coffee that I'm putting in that, you know, it's like I get a really dirty look.
Oh, George, I can't thank you enough for being with us and for writing this book, which is going to live on and on. It's just beautiful, and thank you so much.
Thank you. You're such an attentive reader, and it's so nice to be on a show where somebody has read it and has been moved by it, and thank you so much.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm attentive to books that are well-read, and this one is. George Hodgman was our guest, and the book is Bettyville. And it is beautiful. It's getting rave reviews all over the country. It's a perfect gift to remember your mom or to think about the mother-child relationship, the things that we don't talk about with our parents, and what it means to just to take care of someone, to be good to somebody, to be kind. God knows the world needs more of that. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this wonderful hour, and thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Happy Mother's Day to all of you, moms and grandmas and aunts, and have a really good day. We'll be with you again on Monday at 1 for All Things Political.